Good morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to the realization that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I'm Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, 877-300-7645. We'll begin today with Kirk, and we're going to return to the statements that are presented in two different places. Zechariah is the category of a prophetic testimony we have been considering. We began in the 13th chapter. We're continuing now into the 14th. And in this, we find Yahweh telling us the conditions that exist, his approach, his attitude, the exact timing of his return, the place of his return, the consequence of his return, the attitude that he is manifesting upon his return. And we find that most everything he says through Zechariah, 400 years earlier than the Olivet Discourse, is then repeated as a corroboration by Yahusha. How are you, Kirk?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm down here in the wonderful state of Texas today.
Well, howdy.
Howdy. Yeah. So, I don't think Texas considers themselves the South, but certainly we're doing fine here. So, go ahead.
No, I'm just nothing. Then go ahead.
Okay. So where we were yesterday is that we realized that when, according to what Yah was saying in Zechariah, that when he returns, he's not returning as the all-welcoming, all-loving God of Christianity.
No, not at all.
He's not coming back as an ordinary man, as he is depicted in Christianity. You know, the cute little guy with his Roman nose and piercing blue eyes and a lovely smile and hands that are always outstretched and perfectly flowing white robe, a little halo over his head. He's not going to look like that, is he?
No, I'm afraid you wouldn't recognize him.
Matter of fact, he's not even coming back as Yahusha, as a diminished manifestation, is he?
No, he's ratcheted up quite powerfully at this point.
Yeah, and he's coming back as Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
He's not coming back set apart.
That's right.
And so if your God has been Jesus Christ, you're in real trouble at this point. And it's really interesting, too. There isn't even if you were to give Christians the benefit of the doubt they do not deserve, and you were to say, well, Jesus Christ is just really a English way of saying the Messiah Yahusha, and that's who we mean, God knows who we mean, even then, you wouldn't be right, because this prophecy does not say that they will say to me, this is the one-third of the Israelites who have been saved. It does not say they will say to me, Yahusha is our God.
No. All they say is Yahweh.
So even if God gave them a break they do not deserve and said, okay, so you screwed up my name, so you named me after a pagan god. So you just butchered everything that was important about my name, the fact that I was coming in my father's name, and my father is Yahweh, and you changed it to from Yahusha, which means Yahweh saves, to Jesus, for crying out loud. If I were to forget about all of that, just look the other way, as Christians would have him do, it's still not Jesus there. It's not Yahusha there. It's Yahweh.
Right.
And there's none of them that use that name. In fact, when you use that name in their midst, they have a conniption fit.
Unfortunately, so do Jews.
Yeah, but Christians do. It's what's really interesting. Now, the Jews do for different reasons. Their reasons are long and sorted, but the
sacredness of the name thing.
Yeah, well, that really was always just the excuse. It had nothing to do with reality.
Sure.
They wanted to impose a religion of men.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to impose a religion of men is to make the God unknowable by ordinary men. And the way that you go about doing that is you tell people that you cannot understand who he is. You can't know him on your own. The only way that you can be right with him is to trust us on all of this. And the easiest thing to do is begin by saying that you can't even pronounce his name. So that's the reason that all of that occurred. In Christianity, it occurred as a direct result of the fact that they wanted for Christianity to prevail in the Roman Empire and to be imposed in the Roman Empire, the Christian God had to be the same as the Roman gods. Mm-hmm. So they simply named a god after the chief Roman god and then gave him all Roman and Greek god characteristics. And therefore, the actual God who bore no resemblance to any of the Roman or Greek gods had to be obliterated, all traces of him. So they simply removed all reference to him.
Yeah, it had to be disassociated from Israel as well.
Yeah.
In every possible way.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, too, is this was talking about how blinded by the sun, the Gentiles were in opposition to his mighty man that was related to him. But there's only one shepherd, one mighty individual that's related to Yahweh, and yet Yahweh is saying here, you know, they're in opposition to that individual, to Yahusha, by their creation of Jesus Christ.
Great metaphor, though.
It is. It is, but it's also interesting that he says, you know, Yahusha was related to me. He didn't say that Yahusha was me.
Well, you've made that point about when you are quoting Yahusha, when he says, "You came in my, I came in my father's name,
and you did, you did not accept me, but one will come in his own name, and him you will accept."
Him in his name, and
right. Yeah, he's the fact that he came in his father's name. He's not his father.
No, he represents him.
Yeah, you know, I'm here today in my father's name too, but I'm not my father.
No.
I was conceived by my father. And Yahusha, same way, conceived by the father.
Created.
No, yeah, he is not the father. And so that's the distinction here that is being made. And Yahweh makes the distinction, but yet he says, no, I'm coming back in my own name. And those who are my children are going to say, Yahweh is our God. And so it doesn't give you any wiggle room here if you're a Christian. You're in serious trouble. And he is coming back displeased. He says, you know, depart. I mean, things are really going to get nasty here, because those who are here, those who have come in opposition to me, are now raping the women of Jerusalem. They're plundering it as well. And, you know, just look today. What did the Muslims do to the tomb of Joseph?
I'm not sure exactly, but I'm sure they destroyed it.
Yeah, they destroyed it. You know, here they are complaining that Israel, who by all means should have obliterated the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque off of the Temple Mount when they prevailed in the Six-Day War, absolutely unequivocally, because that scar was put there when the Muslims defeated the Byzantines to show that, you know, we can put our monument right on top of what was your place. It's like the Blue Mosque in Istanbul. That was, you know, the great cathedral, that Constantine built there, and they just simply put their logos on it to say, we conquered you. I mean, that's all it is. The Dome of the Rock is nothing more than a we opted you, we bested you, we conquered the dreaded Jews. Because this, to say that it's a holy site in Islam is to say that everybody is stupid. Because they say it's a holy site because Muhammad was there. Because the Quran mentions it as the furthest mosque. Now, by the way, the Quran never mentions Jerusalem. But it says that he went to the furthest mosque, and it's assumed that he went to Jerusalem. But the fact is that whole story is nothing but an embarrassment for the Jews. I'm assuming for the Muslims, because he claims that he traveled there on a winged ass. Asses don't fly.
No.
And then he claimed that that when he got there, he met in the temple. The temple had been destroyed.
Been destroyed, right?
Almost 600 years previously. But he was too stupid to know that.
Well, being an ass of a man like Ishmael, that's not right.
Yeah, I guess that he had that part right. At least he had the ass right. And that he leapt up from this non-existent temple on this winged ass. And on the way to Allah's seven heavens, the first stop was in hell. And so the way to the Islamic, the way up to the Islamic hell, or heaven, is through the Islamic hell. That's the first stop he made along the way. And he says, oh, yeah, when I was there, I found all the inhabitants were women who were hung by meat hooks through their breasts. So the Islamic hell was filled with physical beings, not souls. And the god of the Islamic hell was into torturing women. And he so this is the loving god of Islam. He hangs women eternally by their breasts by meat hooks. That's the story of the furthest mosque and of the Dome of the Rock that Muslims say is their second holiest site. It's nothing but an absolute embarrassment to Muhammad, to Islam, to Allah, for anybody that would read anything about it. Why don't we discuss it openly as opposed to pretend that this is an affront to Muslims, that the Jews allow them to retain this scar in the most important place in the world, their place.
Who can read that? What kind of sicko reads that and thinks this is a religion for me? I mean, God.
Or when they say that they're having this day of rage and they're killing with knives and all manner of weapons, terrorizing Israelites, that the intelligent thing to do, and they're doing it, they say, because the Israelites are infringing on their access to their ridiculous religious site, that what we're going to do to show that we're the better people is we're going to burn the tomb of Joseph, which, by the way, we also claim in the Quran, but that'll show them.
That'll teach them.
That'll tell them really who we are. Yeah, that we're the oppressed. Good grief. The next line says, and this is of Zechariah, and Yahweh, my God. It doesn't say Jesus, my God. It doesn't say the Lord, my God. It doesn't say Christ, my God. It doesn't say Allah, my God. It says Yahweh, my God, will return. Well, that means he's been here before.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those who are, doesn't say saints, doesn't say angels. It says Kodeshim, set apart. It's the plural of Kodesh. Set apart with you.
I looked that up this morning, and the English Bible-oriented dictionaries and all, they just cannot get set apart. I mean, they just it's always holy, it's always consecrated, it's always religious, silly term. So I went to the oldest reference, and it's quaff, delete, shin, or Q-A-D-N-S-H. It's set apart, and every old definition is set apart for a special purpose.
Yeah, is there anything
for a special purpose?
Right.
I'm sorry,
set apart for a special purpose.
So what is the concept?
And if you really dig deep, you will find, in addition to set apart, you will find cleansing and purifying as roots of the word, right?
Yeah.
Particularly the verbal root.
One of them is you put a mem in front of it as well. So yeah, that way absolutely.
Yeah, but in terms of set apart, what does set apart mean?
Well, it means special. It means Yahweh is divided. You know, he's all about cutting. He said, I'll break up families. I'll break up, you know. Moshe said, okay, those on that side, those on that side, you know, when he came back with that and found the calf. I mean, Yahweh wants to know who's with him and who's against him.
If I have a pile of gold nuggets sitting here on the desk,
Right.
And I take, let's say there's 100 of them here, and I set five of them off to one side and five of them off to the other side. Have I demonstrated what it means to be set apart?
Well, you've set apart things of the same. So in that context, mm-hmm. that's like setting apart the spirit, this Ruach mm-hmm. Kodesh, or setting apart Yosha. It's your yeah. goal.
Yeah, in fact, the example that I've used so many times is, imagine you're in a ship, shoot me, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and you dump a bucket of water. You throw a bucket of water over the side of the boat, and you pull it up, and you've got this pail of water. Is that pail of water now set apart from the ocean?
Well, it's set apart from the ocean, yes.
Yeah, and but is it the same thing as the ocean?
It's still H2O.
Okay, is it the same amount in that bucket as in the ocean?
Of course not.
Okay, so it's the same, exact same stuff, just a not the same amount of the same stuff.
The particle of, yeah, if you will.
Okay. Now, if I had to take out of that bucket of water, if I were to freeze some of it and sculpt it into the physical image of a man, and I were to boil some of it so that it is like steam, which has, you know, power, more power, more energy than the frozen water, is the steam any different than the ocean, other than it's less of it and it's in a different state?
It's still H2O.
Still the water in the same
water.
Whatever the ocean water was comprised of, with its H2O and its saline contribution, it's exactly, with its impurities, whatever, it's exactly the same. It's just not the same amount and not the same state.
Mm-hmm.
And the sculpted form, which would, you know, last a short while as the ice would eventually melt and just drip right back into the sea, but it's the exact same material set apart from the ocean, less than the ocean, just in a different state. You want to understand the set apart spirit, the most set apart, which is Yahusha, and how they relate to the Father? That's the best way to understand why Yahweh uses the term set apart in reference to Himself, the Spirit, Yahusha, the Shabbat, the seven invitations to meet with Him each year, His Torah, His land, everything that's important to Him, His Shabbat. They're all Kodesh. They're all set apart.
So
who is it that's coming back?
Yeah, we're still coming back.
Okay, and with the Kodesh.
Set apart prayer, yes.
With those who are set apart. So if Yahweh says His Torah is set apart, His covenant is set apart, His Shabbat is set apart, His invitations to meet are set apart, His Spirit is set apart, that He is set apart, that His Yahusha is the most set apart, set apart, set apart. Do you think maybe there's a common thread there with those that are returning with Him, that maybe they too...
Who may be set apart.
Set apart, and that they have become set apart by capitalizing on the things that Yahweh said are set apart?
I would go there.
I would go there too. So why is it that set apart has always changed to this religious mumbo jumbo of holy, so that it's no longer understood?
Too confused.
Yeah, it's laid out right before our eyes. Yahweh says He will... Yahweh, my God, He will return, and all of those who are set apart, and this actually says with you, because Zechariah is having a conversation with Yahweh. You know, Yahweh has made a bunch of statements. But he's enabling the prophet Zechariah, which means, remember, Yahweh, to participate in all of this. You know, I think it's really interesting how, in most of the prophetic statements, Kirk. The prophet themselves, in the midst of Yahweh's discussion, in the midst of Yahweh's testimony, get to react. So here is Zechariah. He's been taken to the future, and he sees this return, and he says, and Yahweh is going to return and the set apart with him. And it says, with you, because he's speaking to Yahweh in first person. It's just like, remember the Habakkuk prophecy regarding the disgusting nature of the founder of Christianity about Paul, and Habakkuk has been given access to Paul's mantra, his Pauline doctrine, and he's just flabbergasted. He's reading here that, you know, according to Pauline doctrine, that God died for the Christian sins. The Christian sins have been forgiven because God died. And Habakkuk say, what, are you crazy? God can't die. I mean, why would anybody in their right mind believe this rubbish? You know, you hear him saying it, and here Zechariah is watching this, and he's saying that this in this event, the set apart are returning. And if Christianity didn't go to the length that it does to confuse, deliberately confuse Christians by changing God's testimony, then maybe more people would understand that it's the set apart that are coming with him. And who the set apart is and why he used the term set apart. He didn't use saints. He didn't use holy.
No.
He was set apart. And, you know, the Spirit's not holy. She's set apart. And the Shabbat's not holy. It's set apart.
I'll give you a word from the previous verse that proves how these guys we're talking about actually do this. There's a King Uzzah. And you look it up, and of course, you said his name means Yah is mighty, which is a good translation. Strong says, just to throw a wrinkle into it, his strength is in Yah, Jah, as in Jehovah. But this is was really interesting. The New American Standard, they say, my strength is in Yah, Y-A-H. Well, they know who his name is.
Right.
But, these are the people that brought us Jesus, Jehovah, God, for lack of a better word, of Elohim.
And the Lord. I mean,
if anybody is listening or reading this stuff and says, you know, and really doesn't understand, these people twist all this stuff, just like in the garden.
Yeah.
And I don't understand, you know, if you read enough of it, you say, well, they forgot to twist that one.
Yeah.
I mean, surely somebody who wrote that said, well, if they didn't know what Yah's name was, they would say, well, strength is in Yah. What's a Yah?
What's a Yah? Yeah, and what's this this mighty individual who said, I came in my Father's name, and you didn't receive me? Well, you know, the Father's not named Jesus.
Yeah. What's his name, Zeus?
Yeah, is the Father's name Zeus? Well, it is if you look at the caricature.
Yeah.
So the set apart will come with him. And then this is from that individual, Yahusha, and he says, he will send forth his messengers with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his chosen from the four winds, from the ends of the heavens to the other extreme. So when he's talking about, and this is in Matanyahu, when he talks about his return,
right.
And he says, he's going to come back with his, and this is eklektos. Ek means out. Eklektos is those who are picked out. So, this set apart and picked out, same concept. And so, he is, when Yahusha is in the Olivet Discourse talking about his return and who's coming with him, he's not making it up. He's not providing new information. He is telling us that, in fact, what he's doing is he's affirming the testimony in Zechariah. Now, by him affirming the testimony in Zechariah, quoting it, you would think that if you're a Christian, you want to understand the Olivet Discourse and the conditions around his return, that you would go to the discussion that he is quoting from, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And if you went there, you'd find that he's returning to Jerusalem. And you would find that he is returning for his children, that he uses a line, and they will say, Yahweh is our God, and I will say,
they're my people.
They're my family.
All right.
And you'd say, well, you know, because all of these, a good Bible has a concordance where it tells you what that was cited from.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd go to Hosea, and you'd read the story of Hosea, and it says, wait a minute, he's coming back for Israel. He's coming to Israel, he ain't coming to America.
Yeah, this ain't made up stuff.
He ain't coming to the Vatican and the church. He's not being called Jesus. I'm on the wrong parade here.
Yeah.
I need to step out of line because this parade's going the wrong direction. We may have trumpeters, but our trumpeters are playing a different song. Wow. So it's a realization here that Yosha was citing Zechariah doing what he always did. He always answered every question that was ever asked of him. Now he's answering this question that his learners, the disciples, had asked him about. Yeah, tell us about the conditions surrounding your return. And the first statement he makes is just riveting. The first statement he makes is, many will claim I am the Christ and will deceive many. Oh, my.
Hmm.
What did Paul claim? That he was the Christ?
He had to complete the course, didn't he?
Yeah, and no one deceived more than he did. And your soul should answer and respond, appearing before and approaching the material manifestation of the light, the maternal, feminine manifestation of the light that purifies, enlightens, and elevates unto Yahweh. So here as he's coming back, and he's citing a line. He's citing the specific instructions that he gave on Yom Kippurim. Doesn't he say in Yom Kippurim, and your soul should respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the maternal manifestation of the light to approach Yahweh?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that it's word for word exactly what the instruction that Yahweh provided in the Torah, in Kara, Leviticus, as he describes what we ought to do when we're invited to participate in the Day of Reconciliations?
If you're not covered in light, it's your peril.
Right. So here he has told us in Zechariah that I'm coming back to restore my relationship with my children,
mm-hmm.
which is the covenant. Because then look at Hosea. The covenant is, he says, you broke the covenant. So I'm divorcing myself, but I'm going to re-enable you to participate in the covenant, and you're going to become my children again in this covenant family. So he's told us that this is the day that of reconciliation as he begins this conversation, and now he's citing the line directly out of Yom Kippurim. Now, how hard is it at that point, if you are making the connections, forming connections, using your noodle, you're thinking, you're attempting to understand what he is saying. How hard is it to make the connection between Yom Kippurim and his return, and why the instructions on Yom Kippurim are so essential?
I have no idea why.
It sounds.
I think about it all the time. I have no idea. You just don't want to know.
The essence of understanding. And most people would prefer to understand the lone means to eternal life and to enrichment and empowerment by God Himself.
They say so all the time.
Yeah, they say so. And all you've got to do to transition from being played for a fool by your religion to actually knowing the truth and then understanding the truth is observe what he had to say, read it, and then make the necessary connections to transition from knowing to understanding. And these connections are really easy. They're right before your eyes. Now, I would say, Kirk,
it's back to that thing about having an open mind.
And yeah.
Fine, you can't get there. You just will not get there.
It's really attitude.
Yeah.
Do you want to know the truth? And should the truth be wholly in conflict with your religion, with your politics, with your patriotism, with your militarism, with whatever it is that you're aligned with, some or all of the aforementioned? If the truth, and the truth is, in opposition to everything that you have been deceived to believe, are you going to go where the words lead, or are you going to reject it? Attitude.
That's it. Yeah.
But I would tell you, Kirk, that the reason that we find this connection where Yahweh is providing advice where he says, you know, respond to my invitation and approach the maternal manifestation of my light. Because he's saying here that he's coming back undiminished. He says it both in Matanyah as Yosha, and he says it here in Zechariah that he's coming back undiminished. And therefore, if you're going to withstand that amount of energy, you too are going to have to be energy. You know, light doesn't have any problem around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Energy and energy. But if you take something that's material and you put it in proximity to the sun, it's obliterated.
Yes, gobbles it right up.
Right. The only reason, I suspect, that we're able to make this connection and therefore understand this is because we took the time to actually wrestle with the instructions associated with Yom Kippurim.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember spending weeks investigating every word, thinking of everything that could be communicated by the verbs, anah, to answer and respond, karab, to approach, to come near, and isha, the material manifestation of light. So here, as Yahweh is returning with those who are set apart based upon their acceptance of his covenant, he is telling those who are interested in what he has to say that your soul should answer and respond, appearing before the maternal, feminine manifestation of the light that purifies, enlightens, and elevates to approach Yahweh. To my thinking here, Kirk,
mm-hmm.
challenge this if you think that I'm doing some extrapolation or making an assumption, that for him to repeat that in this context does two things. One, it is another affirmation that his day of return is Yom Kippurim, which is, I think, obvious anyway, because he says in Zechariah that when he returns, it will be to restore, reaffirm, to reconcile his relationship, his covenant relationship with Yisrael and with Yahudah, and that's who he's returning to here. He's made that very clear.
Very clear. Mm-hmm.
But so that's one reason. But I think the second reason is to explain why he has asked us, why he has invited us, to come into the presence, to respond to the invitation and come into this presence of the maternal manifestation of his light. He's coming back undiminished. And therefore, if we are not enveloped in his spiritual energy, his light, then we're still flawed. We can't be in his presence. We can't approach him. And we're ill-prepared for the consequence of the emergence of this amount of energy, to be in proximity of this amount of energy and power. So he's explaining why he provided these instructions to us in reference to Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm. No, it's pretty straightforward to me. But I've been reading an awful lot.
Yeah.
All fairness, but yes, amen.
And just to make to underscore that, he says, "This shall come to pass on a day in which there will not be a diminishing of his esteemed and beloved light."
Right.
So isn't now he's saying, listen, I'm going to come back undiminished. I've told you that my nature is light. I've invited you to come into the presence of my light.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm coming back undiminished. I'm coming back as light. And since at this point you ought to know the difference between matter and energy, that if I'm coming back undiminished, you're going to be obliterated if you're not enveloped
in
my
light. If you just looked at the sun for a few minutes, you can blind yourself.
Correct. Well he's, didn't he say that the people here are those that are have been scattered away from him? Are blinded by the sun?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so you're right. And so here is the creator of the sun. Here is the creator of the 400 billion suns in the Milky Way galaxy. Here is the creator of hundreds of billions of galaxies, each with hundreds of billions of suns. And the creator of all of this is coming back undiminished. His light undiminished. And
good kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm not extrapolating there. That's what he has said. So the creator of the universe, which has hundreds of billions of suns in each of hundreds of billions of galaxies, is coming back undiminished.
And that's where the story began with Abraham. He showed him the light. He
said, that's right. He told Abraham, let me show you what you're inheriting in the covenant. And he took him not only to the spiritual realm of the heavens, he took him to see the light of stars. That's what you're inheriting. So it's all putting the pieces together. But if he says, this time I'm coming back, there shall not be a diminishing of his esteemed and beloved light, doesn't that infer to you that on his previous visits that there was a diminishment of his light? Why would he make the distinction that this time there'll be no diminishing of his esteemed light, unless in his previous visits he did diminish himself? An aspect of himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't that also affirm that when Yoshua said, the Father is greater than I?
Sure.
Doesn't that explain this transition from energy to matter, E equals MC squared?
Mm-hmm. And back again after the...
Exactly.
The foot edge joins with it.
Exactly. But this time, no diminishment of his life.
Tonight?
No. I will be in the air tonight.
Okay.
And what's interesting, and we'll cover this on Monday, is the next line is from that we're going to consider is from Matanyah, which tells us exactly the same thing Yosha here quoting Zechariah. All fits together.
Amazing.